seats, just members of the AOC, so the minute the opposition arrives, we'll begin. So you can relax, enjoy the coffee and the tea and everything else that's provided by Nani and his team.
Tim, everything to deal with procedure issues.
Okay.
Are there any documents apart from those that we are looking at?
Religious suggestions?
Are there no amendments to the 17th in the department at this point?
Yes, I
make copies when there's a conference
Monday to the Wednesday, 13th to the 15th, plus the Bay and the Tower House. People's Power, People's Power, the Civil Society Conference on the Legislature. It's a whole group of civil society organizations, MaxSesh, Action Watch, Community of Spirit, they come very smart. PMG, Section 27, Social Justice Relations, and Full Council of Churches. Oh, good.
Maybe can we ask if there's limited, Tuesday and Wednesday and Mondays, can we ask if there's a program that we can get through? We can then assess as a committee whether we want to not have meetings on those days, or whether, it's sufficient.
No, Chairperson. I'm to all the committees. It's, yeah.
Right. So our presence or absence is not that crucial in the event that we have. We do have a lot of work.
Yeah.
A Tuesday and a Wednesday, they're allocated from 8 a.m. to 17:15.
I mean, I'd be interested in, I'm sure I've managed for Monday.
Sorry, just a quick question.
So when is this?
No. Taxis? Oh, my administration. My party's administration. You know, it's getting quite bad. I'm confronted the other day by someone who says, "You're judges." And I had to say, no, they're not my judges. I suspect, honourable members, we've become too used to starting at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday. All right. I know it's Wednesday, but...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the forum is starting yet, but I mean, I don't know if the honourable colleagues are aware that you start the meeting in the absence of any opposition member. So can you request the sometimes called official opposition, the largest opposition party,
No, I don't want to give you wrong ideas, but the tradition in this committee has been that if there are no opposition members, we don't start. Don't take advantage of it, because people are under this impression, Mr. Gabinde. I'm saying this particularly for you, that when a committee meets, it must have a quorum. Since 1994, we've operated on the basis that the only time we need a quorum is when we are taking formal decisions. Then we have a quorum. We've sat in this committee with four members. Four. Chairperson, one opposition member, and two other members of the ANC. Let alone, we can talk about that. So, all right. Do they have all their documents, including the one we... All right. In your absence, we've brought to the attention of members this invitation to this conference. Yeah, well, I wish you hadn't said that, because one of the members of the NGOs is sitting here. Yeah, I know, but... Alright, see what you can do about attending. It's on a day when we would normally be meeting at a committee. So that creates a problem, so I'm not sure how we're going to deal with it. There's a criminal procedure amendment bill in the pipeline. So one of these days it will be tabled and we'll be asking for a briefing from the department. What else is there? This is not official, but we've granted law societies their request for an extension time. But they're not the only ones, by the way. There's a whole host of people suddenly Well, I think the law clinics have been quite busy, and now Section 27 of the law have asked me. Really? They deal with educational matters. Anything. Really? Anything. Wow. I can't join that NGO when I leave this place. Deal with anything. Well, it must be. Okay. But it's not official. I don't want now, you know, we have enough work on our hands. Request for meeting. Oh yes, before we formally begin. When last we met with the South African Human Rights Commission, we gave them an undertaking that we would afford them a second opportunity to engage. We did. And they've now written to me, reminding me, and putting forward certain dates. They're in September. So they're in September. The 6th or the 7th, or the 10th or the 11th of September. So that we can meet with them and finish the rest of our discussions. Well, it's a range of issues. You want to make it official? Legal practice?
Yeah. Is this a question of the hearings scheduled for next week? The
hearings have been postponed.
And could you not make that official given that I think it's some mediator and PMG?
All right. Hearings for next week have been postponed until further notice.
And we'll see
on the legal practice board. We're affording you more opportunity to get your act together. All right. So that being the case, what was set down for next week is now postponed until further notice. Okay, Lana?
Yes.
It doesn't mean we're not working next week. We've got other matters to deal with. All right. I'm just trying to think. What else is there? I think that's it. I've got a whole host of letters from prisoners. Oh, the prisoners. Phew. Hey, man. I need a hotline between myself and that judge, inspecting judge. Someone's passed the word around. Yeah. Prisons have their own network. And they've said, you can write to this guy. I need to somehow get a message in their network that, look, don't waste your time. Why? What for? It's a commission. That's what it's there for. Hold it. Why don't they make a written submission? Yeah, like everyone else, make a written submission and then we'll have, Because that's in relation to the Superior Court Bill, is it? 17th Amendment, okay. Alright, yeah. Switch this off. All right. We last dealt with these two bills sometime in February, I'm reminded by Mr. Advocate Alanga. And so we felt that lest we lose track, we should put it on the agenda again. We have received comments by judges of the Constitutional Court on both bills. You should have Debbie and Dean. If you don't have it, we'll get you a copy. That's right. You do have that. Yes. Well, I was going to ask Mr. Skosana if he's aware of this particular doc, because we don't have to. Ms. Munani and I have been conferring before your arrival. We got your email, Dean, and we don't have it. The CC or the SCA. Alright, look, we'll see if we can fund it.
Because actually the Supreme Court has just referred at their point 16. At first we agree with the Supreme Court of Appeals that was 9 for administration, and at their point 27, we think our colleague in the CAI when they make the point in relation to 18 and what was it. So there clearly is something, they're referring to something.
Alright.
And actually simply ask President Biden.
Alright, we'll do that. Mr. Jeffrey.
Yes, it's just really, I think it's going on this recent discussion that we've just had now, but I'm worried that we're not really making progress on these rules.
Okay.
And, I mean, there are 28 rules that have been really last year, and basically, you know, we have a time here, everybody has the opportunity. I don't think we can, obviously already open. We're not going to resolve certain issues now. But I think what would be useful is if we can run through the 70 and identify the clauses where we've got agreement and the clauses that we don't have agreement and what process we need to follow to resolve it, and then move on to the Superior Court. Because I think we need to start aiming to finalize this. I think it would be important to set a target that we pass these bills as the NA this year. I mean, maybe we can do it earlier, but if we don't go into 2013 with these bills not passed.
Yes, could I support that? And where there are big issues on which we haven't reached finality, we leave them for the moment and deal with all the other clauses of both bills, I suggest. And I think we should start with that now, Chair. But there was then one last question. What about the letter from Judge Mpobo to us saying that Judge Mpati would carry forward his process of consultation with all of the judges? You referred to this a while ago. Are we seeing the President Mpati?
No. I hope you will raise this. I raised this with the Chief Justice. In turn, I discussed it with the President. So there's obviously an agreement between that discussion we've had with the court judges and the SA judges. Proceed on that basis that we've now from the looking at the bill. And we're doing so with the comments by the judge of the Constitutional Court alongside us. And as Mr. Jeffrey says, where we find one another, so be it. Where we don't, we flag it. And see how much progress we make. We're dealing with the Constitution Committee amendment. All right, clause one. You need your constitution.
In clause one, I suggest the extra issue that we need to look at and which we have not yet discussed arises from the Constitutional Court's judge's position that the matter of consultation should be dealt with. This is the issue that finds its mirror in clause 8 of the Superior Court's bill. On their memorandum at point 5 onwards, you will see that there are two views in that court about whether the Chief Justice should be obliged to consult with heads of court, whether the heads of court should be obliged in turn to consult with judges in their courts. Now, there are two views in that court, but I would like to express a preference for the idea that there should be a consultation, and I suggest that's dealt with in 8.7, and I suggest the way to capture that here would be to say that in section 165 sub 6, the Chief Justice is the head of the judiciary and exercises responsibility over the establishment and monitoring of norms and standards for the exercise of the judicial functions of all courts in consultation with the affected courts. I think it is right to say that the words responsibility and over imply consultation in any case. I think the Supreme Court judges are right when they speak of consultative leadership, and that principle is in accordance with the position of the Chief Justice being the first among equals, the tradition of leadership in the judiciary in the past, and the practice in relation to issues since the advent of the Constitution. So I would support the idea of adding the words in consultation with the affected courts.
Right. It's a nice beginning. Mr. Jeffrey.
I think then what we are aiming for is
a the official then to start producing for the future meeting a document with amendments. Just to say, look, my own view on this one is that should be I'd rather share the first view in the Constitutional Court judge's memo that it's over regulation and that the details should be spelled out in clause 8 of the Superior Court Act. So I think the issue is we're trying to identify issues, and I think that what Ms. Mutz has proposed is very clearly an option. So it can maybe be expressed as an option in an amendment, a list of amendments, which we can then look at further and also discuss when we get to clause 8.
Going to be a constant cross-reference between the two goals on the bottom. It's unavoidable. Okay. Any further comments on this particular point?
Okay, maybe if I can just also highlight one of the issues that I see, if you read their document 8A, the fact that the Chief Justice says in terms of 165.6 responsibility over rather than for. Just to explain, we took that from from where we deal with the minister, who's got final responsibility over the national prosecuting authority. I think there's a fine nuance there, rather than saying for, prefer over to. Maybe, if I can just elaborate a little bit on that, probably why they are guarding the Constitutional Court who guards or warns against over-regulating. But you have a real power, it's a responsibility over. And that's why personally I would be hesitant to say in consultation, you don't exercise that kind of responsibility in the consultation with anybody.
See the argument on page 2 of the Concourse document. They set out why the members of this court who believe that consultation should not be over-regulated for are happy with this formulation. Those of us who require consultation to be spelled out think that this consultation requirement is somewhat defective because, and then they say, heads of court are not required to consult with their court. And then number two, the Chief Justice, as head of this court, is not obliged to consult members of this court, that's the Constitutional Court, before issuing directives or protocols. But I don't.
Precisely. And their reference, by the way, leading into what you've just read, at the bottom of page 1, their reference is wrong. They refer to clause 8 of the Constitutional Amendment. They clearly mean superior.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was left in the staff to draft. I would imagine.
No, this is drafted by somebody.
By somebody?
Well, the second view, because
it's
those
of us.
Yes.
Oh, those of us,
no,
all right.
No, from the second view.
All right, take it back. All right. Any more on this particular clause? Or no? No. Clause 2. It's amending 166. Okay. Lower courts. And Ms. Smuts?
I'm sorry, I wanted to stick to clause 3.
No, okay. Clause 2, Mr. Jeffrey.
I think that 2A, well, basically, I don't have a problem with the amendment to changing. I'm not quite too sure the reason of 2A, the amendment to 166C. What I do have a problem with, and the other amendment under C to High Court, to High Court of South Africa, what I do have a concern with, and again, I think maybe we don't actually have a party position on it as yet, so maybe it can be parked, and that is the issue of magistrates versus lower courts. I mean, personally, my view is that we're dealing with the Superior Court's bill, so we should really be focusing on the Superior Courts, and the issue of the lower courts has not been finalized, and I would rather sort of see that as a bridge to cross when that issue is done, because as we're dealing with the Superior Courts and saying that the constitutional amendments need to be looked at in the context of the Superior Court's bill, it's very difficult to say, well, the amendments relating to the magistrates' courts, we don't have a bill to look at in the context of it. So I know that a partner wanted to kill two birds with one stone, as it were, and do the amendments and then come later with the Magistrates Court's Amendment Bill, or might want to call it the lower courts or the inferior courts or whatever. But I'd rather personally, it's not party position, but so maybe if that can just be tagged, that the issue of magistrates versus lower needs something to look at, that we need to further deliberate. I'm not sure what the other party's response is. Just come in. I don't know what the DA.
Yes, I agree.
My apologies.
It's right in principle, and if it affects anything else in either of the acts, you know, and as long as it doesn't, you know, change anything that else is, you know, a consequence, I think that's probably better.
Is that the DA position or the member of the lower courts commission?
Personal position.
The issue
I want to speak to us about is how we're going to constitute the JSC and how the Magistrate Commission is going to fit into that.
So I've recognized you, one of the colonies. So your position then, Mr. Jeffrey, applies to sub C as well, right?
Yeah.
All right. Epitomist?
Yes, Chairman, indeed, from what the Honourable Chairman said, what would be the reason for referring to the Magistrate Court at all when we are dealing with the Supreme Court? I know that you might want to pass this for later consideration, but I would be interested to know from the Department as to whether indeed there is something hidden that you don't understand. That is the reason for the inclusion of this, seeing that the Magistrate Court are regulated by, in terms of the Magistrate Court Act. And just as an aside for the future, if we are to refer to superior courts, then it would mean that courts that are not superior courts would be inferior courts, isn't it? The opposite of superior, inferior and higher, lower. And that could give us some trouble.
Did you want to say something? I'm sorry. I think your hand was up. No.
Okay, maybe I can help you. I think members will recall it was never formally published, but the original draft or an original draft of the 17th Amendment Bill changed magistrates' courts to lower courts, and it also changed magistrates to judges of the lower courts. And after a round of consultation there, and as a result of the response we got from there, it was decided not to go with that for the time being, as Mr. Jeffrey said, in fact, to revisit that when we deal with the restructuring of the lower courts altogether. But this was left because it wasn't very controversial at any stage. But there's some merit with respect in what he's saying, because there's a technical difficulty as well. If you've got a constitution referring to lower courts, but you've got a Magistrates Courts Act, and you've got small claims courts, that kind of court, so there may well be... I think the original intention that we first explained as well was to avoid a situation where we've got to come back and amend the constitution once we're dealing with the lower courts. But I think that will be a wish that's not going to materialize. If we change magistrate judges, for example, we'll have to revisit the constitution in any event. So it seems unavoidable that when we start really dealing and tackling that issue of magistrates courts, etc., that we will have to revisit the constitution as well. But it's for you to decide.
It's going to take a long time to change magistrates judges. Like a long, long time. Mr. Swart,
Mr. Jeffrey. Firstly, my apologies for being late. I trust you got my note. I've looked at sub C and I tend to agree with Mr. Jeffrey. It's something that we can hold over when it comes to lower courts, bearing in mind what you just said about the various implications and that we will have to revisit it at a later stage. So just very briefly, I don't have a problem with that being held over. Thank you, Chair.
You know, the theme is actually to be consensus. As I said, I don't think it's something we want to finalise because, again, within majority party, we haven't finalised it. But the consensus from the committee, informal consensus, seems to be that we would like the 17th Amendment to deal with the matters relating to the Sugerya courts. And I think it then would come through in terms of, I mean, there's one other section, I think, or one or two other sections that Mr. DeLange's point, I think, of there will have to be, when there's reform of the magistrates' courts or all the courts under the superior courts, whether they be inferior or lower or less superior, or actually that's a good one, less superior, sorry, that gets dealt with in a separate constitutional amendment. I can't see personally, I'm not in favour of the magistrates becoming judges, but I mean that's something we can debate. But I think the issue is basically magistrates' courts matters will be the 19th or 20th amendment. And can we sort of roughly, agree that we would like the 17th amendment to focus on the higher courts? Higher, no, including Constitutional Court, SCA. So, you know, yeah. On the Superior Court, basically.
Yeah.
So there's Superior Court, yeah.
Alright. Okay, good.
Clause
3.
Yeah.
Oh.
I want to get
into
one.
Alright, Mr.
Jeffrey,
and then Mr.
Okay. So, is this really an attempt to try and preempt a lengthy discussion? Huh? I mean, this is the nub of the controversial issue of the bill. And I think we can maybe want to discuss now process. Yeah, but it's a question of parking it. I mean, the first step really is, and this is where all the other consultations with the SCA and so on come in. And I think the issue is, the first question is, do we want to change what is in the Constitution already? And then if we do agree on that one, what is the wording that we want to look at? But I don't know if I would suggest we just discuss process issues for resolving it rather than the detail.
Now that will teach the Honourable Jeffrey to anticipate what I was going to say. Now, I think, I've been thinking about this, and I think the main thing to keep in mind is the following. The chief thing which we are wishing to achieve, and as far as I'm concerned, the sooner the better, is to create the real institutionally independent judicial branch, and that is done by making the Chief Justice the head of the judicial branch, which is already settled law that the Chief Justice is the head, and secondly by creating the judicial governance system, which in the description of Mr. DeLange once is the real innovation here in this package of two worlds. I think that is the important thing to get through. Now, This question of the jurisdiction of the Constitutional Court is the most difficult of the issues before us. As we know, we don't have agreement amongst us, even within parties at this point. And therefore, what I wanted to say was precisely, let's move ahead and deal with all the very many other clauses, particularly in the superior, before we come back to this one. But if you will allow me just a summary, and I actually think we should not even go so far as to draft options, but just a summary of how far we had got. I had already made for you the argument that we have a problem resulting from the historical nature of the decision to create a constitutional court in addition to a Supreme Court of Appeal, that there is no neat divide between constitutional matters and other law, and therefore the basis on which they take cases is somewhat artificial, and that we should address that. And I gave you a formulation along the lines of what the cases they might take and decide are arguable points of law of significant public importance on appeal in the interest of the development of the law. That would be one approach. Now, I think we should just record that the two courts have each taken a position. But on the face of it, unanimous, although we know there are differences in their ranks. And I think it is just worth looking at what the Constitutional Court said to us at C on page 2. We think that the section concerning the jurisdiction of the Constitutional Court should not make a distinction between constitutional matters and other matters. It should make it quite plain that this court is the highest court in all matters. In other words, their position is consonant with the bill as tabled. However, they would write it differently. They say the distinction between constitutional matters and other matters that are not constitutional does not have to be made if one is concerned with jurisdiction. In other words, they wouldn't write subclause 3 the way it is here. They say, interestingly, the distinction might become an issue when we look at sub 6. That's the direct access one, which I think is very interesting because I think that they are making a real drafting suggestion there without saying so. But they emphasize that the distinction has nothing to do with jurisdiction and that jurisdiction should be dealt with separately and it should have nothing to do with how matters are to be brought to this court, as it is set out at the moment in 3b Roman 1 AABBCC. But they want the Constitution to make it clear that this court is the final court as well as the final court of appeal in all matters. That is their position. That is not, of course, the position of the SCA. And then over the page at their 14, they do address the matter of 167 sub 6, that's direct access. They say they have some doubt as to whether the limitation of their jurisdiction there, only the constitutional matters, is justified, but perhaps the best provision would be for this court to grant access when in the interest of justice to do so. Now, and we could either ask Mr. De Lange to draft an option along the lines of what they express, and another along the lines of what the SA wants, and my version, and whatever other version, or we could leave this matter, the jurisdiction issue, which is the most difficult one. We could leave it for now, and I tend to think we should, rather than getting into a lot of drafting work. Because I don't think the consequential effects are going to be such, I might be wrong, are going to be such that we can't now move on and deal with the rest of the clauses in this and the whole of the superior court bill. Because it is the big issue. It is the big historic issue. It doesn't lend itself easily to solution. The only thing I think we agree on is what the Honourable Jeffries described as the Simonsberg model, which we have now inherited historically. We do have Twin Peaks system. That is the problem, but we've inherited it, and the only refinement is that in fact it's a Twin Peaks system where one peak is higher than the next one, because the Court will be the highest court, it already is. And the CBAG is the settled law that he has paid. So my view would be that we actually don't draft. We will obviously go on thinking and discussing about jurisdiction, but that we don't draft any options.
Chair, I think the few previous speakers have captured quite well where we are, and being in particular with summarising the various arguments. And I think that the suggestion is useful because we will spend a huge amount of time on 3 at this stage, and I think we should rather try to clear up the other issues where there might be less debate and come back to this issue. So I tend to agree with the suggestion of the two previous speakers. Could I just ask whether there was a memo from the SCA? Are you aware of anything? Did we clarify that? Or?
We clarified it and we've said we've changed it up.
Thank you. So there is... Check it up. Fine. Yes. Okay. If it's that's all. Thank you.
Mr. Jeffrey, I think you're here. No, you just said you've agreed.
Agreed,
yeah.
Yes, just a comment. You just spoken about the fact that the Supreme Court bill that you're dealing with is dealing with the Supreme Court matters. So lower courts are not supposed to feature. Now, talking about the jurisdiction of the Constitutional Court, when there's an existence of a Supreme Court of Appeal and other courts. But here we go, in addition to giving it the power, right, to deal with constitutional matters on appeal directly, or when referred to Constitutional Court in terms of legislation, then we say any other matter
this other matter, I think it's one that Supreme Court supposed now to be dealt with by a constitutional court. Yes, they are not necessarily of a constitutional nature. It looks like to me it's simple enough to go the route that says the constitutional court has to deal with constitutional matters. And don't deal with domestic indeed doesn't seem to be required. Because that is in support of what is called the Finti. Because even if they have not given a memo like the Constitutional Court has done, I think that was indicated at the court report from the Supreme Court. It goes to what we've always been saying, why fix what is not from a broken.
No, we are like, well, they may not say like you, but we don't have a firm position. All right, let's for now, let's leave close B and move on, okay? I'm sure there will be a lot more discussion and doubt on this particular case. So for now, Mr. De Lange, nothing of close B, all right? We'll just allow discussions to proceed in a normal manner. Close 4, honorable members, amending section 168, this deals with the Supreme Court of Appeal.
If I may, of course, if we leave 3 for the time being, 4 is really a consequence to 3, so my role then.
I'd like to know. I don't see it as a
consequence of 3. This is the clause that basically leaves the issue of the Labour Appeal Court, the appeals, Competition Appeals Tribunal, Competition Appeals was Court, to Acts of Parliament. And I agree with whether we go for the amendment to 3 or we don't, that is proposed here, or whether we keep things as they are, I agree with the fact that the Labour Court should not have to appeal to the SCA. Appeals from the Labour Court should go to the Constitutional Court. No, and this also provides for the Constitution, for the Competition Appeal Court, that they appeal directly to the Constitutional Court, not to the SCA. And effectively it doesn't say that, it basically leaves it up to an Act of Parliament, so it would be up to an Act of Parliament to determine that. And I think that's probably where it should be, not in the Constitution. So basically...
The Superior Court's fault.
Sorry? Well, you see, the difficulty is the Superior Court still doesn't deal with the Labour Appeal Court or the Constitutional, the Competition Appeal Court. They're in other legislation. It's in the Competitions Act and the Labour Relations Act and so on. So I don't think, you know, it would be nice to have one law for all courts, but I don't think we're going to get that anytime soon. But basically what I'm saying is I'm in support of 4 as it is and don't think it doesn't relate to the jurisdiction of the SCA.
Okay.
Not the SCA, the Constitutional Court. So I don't see it as linked to 3, whatever we decide on 3. It's the jurisdiction specifically of the SCA, and it leaves up to Act of Parliament to determine the levels of the peaks.
Steve Swart, then Dean Smith, and then Debbie Schiff.
Chair, I don't think it's that straightforward. What we are doing with 4 then is, in fact, we are decreasing the jurisdiction of the SCA. And that is a significant step that we need to consider. And if we, that is linked, it's slightly separate from 3, but it is linked as well because we're talking about jurisdiction. I don't have a major problem with the Labour Appeals Court, but I've got a problem with the Competitions Act, the Competitions Appeal Court, because they have been continuously overruled by the SCA. There's been a number of judgment. And yes, I appreciate the concerns about the time constraint, but surely it's not correct to exclude the jurisdiction of the SCA when they have overruled the Competitions Appeal Court on a number of occasions and allow only access to the Constitutional Court. We need to be very careful. And again, this is a matter that you'll need a lot of discussion on. I'm not firm in my view, but it's just a concern that I've got
You'll remember when we met with the SCI, I asked the specific question, how many matters have you overruled the competitions appeal court in the SCA? So we are in effect decreasing the jurisdiction of the SCA, and we need to, if we decide to do that, we need to consider that we're doing it against the background of the SCA having overruled the competitions appeal court on a number of occasions. And we need to understand what is the dynamic and the implications of that. Of course, at this stage, they can, there's been a matter that's been heard, I think, what was the, West Grand or something, was heard by the Constitutional Court. It went all the way on a Competitions Act. So they've got the jurisdiction. The CC can hear matters as well at the moment.
On what basis? Constitutional?
Constitutional matters. Why would we now want to exclude the jurisdiction of SCA? And we need to answer that question. I need to be persuaded on that issue.
So the fact that the SCA acts as that?
Yes, as that, and it can go, why do we want to, if at the end of the day we, and I'm not again getting into debate on three, but if we're saying that Ag broke, what are we trying to fix, then why are we now looking at SCA to decrease its jurisdiction? They are linked. They are linked. Thank you.
I'll tell you what the argument is that is persuasive in cutting the ACA level up. Firstly, underlying all our other concerns is the fact that as a result of history, we have too many layers of appeal. Right? Now, what is attractive about cutting the ACA level out is that in the case of both compositions and labor laws, the fraction of time has a bad effect. Businesses get killed off quite literally if you get stuck in cycles of appeal. It happens. They get killed off. And this is not in the interest of competition or business or growth or South Africa. To me, that is the strong argument for cutting out a layer of appeal. But there is one question that I think we need to ask, and I think it's not the answer, but the one that Steve raises. If he wants to raise that matter, he must tell us what was the answer of the SCA. How many cases have you overruled? I mean, I know the anecdotal stuff, oh, so-and-so doesn't want the SCA because his business to overturn, but we can't legislate on that basis. But the argument that we did hear that we have to pay attention to is what the Chief Justice said on Freedom Art. He said there is this difficulty that in the competition hierarchy, the tribunal is not stopped by judges. Remember, in fact, the judges themselves have an exhaustive number of level of appeals, or not of the right kind. He said something to that. To me, that's the only thing that's been worrying. But for the rest, I mean, if you look at the labor court judges, all want, they want to simplify it. They don't want multiple levels of appeals. They want the reinstatement of the labor appeal court's jurisdiction, the final court of appeal in labor, subject only to the constitutional court. We know that's the position of the competition judges. And by and large, I mean, I think it's really bad for business and growth if things get stuck and die as a result of court action. So I'm inclined to like clause 4 the way it is, but there is, to me, that one nagging question, and perhaps Mr. DeLonga and Mr. Spassano want to think about it and advise me that in the competition hierarchy, the tribunal isn't a full court.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I mean, I agree. I think we should talk. I do think they are interrelated. I mean, the whole question of three is, are we going to collapse the courts essentially? And if we are, then they're not going to have jurisdiction that's been given here at all. So, I mean, it is interrelated. The question is, are we going to keep the two courts? Are we going to, you know, are we going to lift jurisdiction? Are we not? I mean, it is essentially interrelated, and I would suggest we also rather park it with three.
Yeah. Look, I mean, it's very clearly a clause that is reducing the jurisdiction of the SCA, but it doesn't say anything about the Constitutional Court. I would accept that there is a link in the sense of why the jurisdiction of the Constitutional Court means they can look at anything, that I feel with the current wording they can effectively look at anything as it is at the moment. But we can park it. I think the issue is that this doesn't inherently, or sorry, it doesn't specifically reduce the power of the SCA. It simply allows, well, it does in the sense of, it doesn't say to what extent, it allows an act of Parliament to determine that a matter does not have to go to the SCA.
We know the two courts it's with, so we're not resolving that issue in a sense. That issue can be then dealt with in that specific act, which are not acts that we deal with. But I think McMuster has made the arguments about why on both counts. I think the principle really is that we don't want too much litigation, too many appeals. It's costly. We basically want one court, high court, superior court to decide, and one other body to appeal, to hear the appeal. And then right or wrong, that's it. In the case of the Labour Court, you've got the Labour Court, the Labour Appeals Court. Cut out the SCA, have the Constitutional Court as a final check, I would say, focus on constitutional matters. Competition Appeals Tribunal, I think this is smart to summarise the issues, just to say that there's a strong lobby, I think, from everybody involved in that area, both business and labour. We did have a Competitions Commission, I think, coming to us, wanting, from the point of view of settling these matters, that, you know, businesses want to invest. They must come here. I mean, decisions must be made. As you know, Chair, I think it's the President, as he called himself, he's called the President, rather, of the Appeal Court, is sort of saying, if we are thinking of changing this clause, he'd like to be able to speak to us. That's Judge Davis. And then Minister Patel is also very eager that this clause remains as it is. As much as concerned, maybe something could be addressed, and can one beef up the Competitions Tribunal is. Can one beef that up? Because I think, unfortunately, with the Prince case, you know, a magistrate for High Court is not enough, as we've seen with the Prince case. But I think those are basically the issues. But I think if we want to, there seems to be general consensus around the Labour Courts from everybody. There's a disagreement, or there may be differences of position or uncertainty on the Appeal Tribunal, or the Appeal Court, Competitions Appeal Court. If we want to go that route, then I think we would need to look at an analysis of the judgments in the SCA from the Competitions Appeal Court, and I think we would then need to then take up Judge Davis on his request that he make submissions and maybe check with the Minister of Economic Development, whether he wants to come and motivate why. My wife says the same. He wants it because he doesn't want, I mean, nobody wants the SCA. Huh? Nobody wants it cut up. From a time point of view, it's the point Ms. Smuts put out.
Yes, thank you. The question of a principle that has been said, quite that about dispensing justice. I came to South Africa as a whole, and I see that we are inclined to make some exceptions regarding the pace at which justice has to be dispensed when it comes to labor issues or economic issues, if you like. And now I'm thinking about those who are not part of that, if they are in. The social aspect of it, those who want justice, not because of economic considerations or labor considerations, but just justice. Now, if we're going to say there are some who deserve quicker justice than others, what does that mean? About the question of principles of equality and so on. And also, we're talking about the Supreme Court of Appeals. Now we're going to have a Supreme Court of Labour Appeals and the Supreme Court of other things appeals, like competition and so on. I'm just throwing that so that you can think about it. Because it should mean that everyone involved in the dispensation of justice administration must understand the principle that justice delayed is justice denied, regardless of which side that also society will come from. The point has been made, the argument has been made that the Supreme Court of Appeal is not a specialist court. It deals with all sorts of issues of law. Is they constitutional, my time, or anything like that. So why should it then be somewhat used in terms of what it is?
Okay. Well, I knew it would be fascinating. All right. Let me ask you then, on clause 4, any further discussion?
Should I come up with some kind of amendment, or should I just leave it for the time being? If I can, may just scheme of things as things stand at the moment in terms of the constitution is the SCA is the final court of appeal unless it's constitutional matters. Then what the bill envisaged is that the constitutional court would be the final court of appeal. So that would give you a bit of a safeguard. If you take things straight from the labour appeal court or the competition appeal court, you can still have that further. If we now take that away, in other words, we do not go for the apex court model for the CC, then that argument that the smuts raised, for example, becomes very, there's quite a bit of merit in that. The issue of the labour court is a bit different. You've got labour court starts with judges, they on the same level as Supreme Court judges. And then you've got a labour appeal court, so you've got that higher, that elevated tier of judges. As you said, the competition tribunal, and then only get to the competition appeal court. So there may be, but there could be options there as well. One of the options could be, and I don't know, this it might be controversial, but it's being done, to put a mechanism in the SCA to ensure that they get attention much quicker, or have some or other special, but it's difficult if you cannot really argue these things off the cuff very easily, and there might be a lot said for and against it. Just a last thing, Chair, as members are probably aware, when the Competition Act was drafted originally, it did say that the Competition Appeal Court would be the final court. It literally forgot about the Constitution and they're trying to address that. When the Competition Act, the Competition Act was drafted. Yes, but they, as I said, they literally forgot. And the same applies to the Labour Appeal Court. Both of these courts ran it perfectly in the Constitution. In the SHA, but that's not what the Constitution says.
And we all want things, Mr. Doesn't mean we're going to get there.
Chair, just following on what JJ said about if we pass the... And this just illustrates that they are interrelated, D and 4, what you've just said. Should we not ask Mr. DeLange to look at some of the cases that the SCA has overruled the Constitution. I'm more interested in the competitions side of things, particularly because the Labour side is staffed by judges. But just the number of cases in the last while that the Supreme Court of Appeal overruled the Constitution Appeal Court. Five or something like that, if that might even be less. No, I want to find out whether there is what is the rationale behind that overruling, and to what degree will that be addressed by the legislation that we're dealing with. I want to find out. But it's just an interesting to find that now we're removing the jurisdiction of that SCA. That could be, and I think against the background of that, if we do. But I appreciate what JJ and Dean have said about the time constraints, and we need to understand that. But then again, what as Colomisa said, what about other courts then? What about the other aspects? If we're starting to deal only with economics and labour, what about other compelling courts? So it's complex. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Mr. Jeffrey, Mr. Advocate Colomisa, and Mr.
Scusa. Yeah, I don't know if we're ready to have any options drafted. I think the issue is more research on what is the picture. So Advocate Wolomisa's point of what are the other courts, income tax courts, I don't know about the Admiralty, whether they're still our maritime law ones, but how does the appeal mechanism work there? I think that research can be done. We don't have a problem, hopefully they've got time for it to look at some of the judgments, well, with both competitions and labour. But I think the bottom line is that, to my mind, no court is right, always. Even the constitutional court can be wrong.
Yeah.
Obviously, the more levels of appeals that you have, the more chance you have of having a right decision, but maybe you actually prefer the decision of the lower court. And it's really more the principle of we should limit the number of layers of appeal because it is too time-consuming and too costly to the ordinary person.
We're not talking here about ordinary persons, we're talking about organized labor and business. the point I wanted to make was that if it were to be agreed that the Constitutional Court will deal with constitutional matters and that the Supreme Court will deal with matters other than constitutional matters at the forum of appeal, last appeal, then the allowing these other courts to also appeal for their decisions to be appealable to the Supreme Court of Appeals, then it will reduce unnecessary appeals because it will only be matters of a constitutional nature that will have to be taken beyond the Supreme Court of Appeals to the Constitutional Court. But if then we are saying the Constitutional Court has to be the last court of appeal on any matter, regardless of whether it is constitutional or not, then it would increase the number of forums that one would have to appeal to in order to delay or seek better justice.
I wanted to bring the attention of the honorary members that this provision, when it was discussed with the head of court and the minister, there were some kind of options which were also suggested by some quarters. The impression one got from that meeting was that the Constitutional Court was the Constitutional Court was eager to deal with matters that come directly from the Labour Appeal Court, because those matters would have been dealt with by a number of judges in the Labour Appeal Court, and it would basically be mainly on a constitutional matter, but on a point of law which would have been canvassed by the Labour Appeal Court as the second year of the court. And I think there was a debate that putting the Labour Appeal Court in the Supreme Court of Appeal is kind of duplicating the same assembly because you've got the court of the first instance, the appeal, whatever, etc. At the Western Commission Court, they were not so much convinced or confident that matters can come direct to the court from the Competition Appeal Court, because the Competition Appeal Court is the court of the system, so it has not been considered at the level whatever. So the problem which was, the one option initially was that exclude only labor matters from the SCA. So the Supreme Court of Appeals, the final court in all matters except labor matters. But I think the safer option was that leave it to the Act of Parliament. Because in the Act of Parliament, if Parliament decides that appeal court, commission appeal matters must go to the SCA, Parliament will say so in an act, not in the Constitution. Parliament will then say, in commission appeal matters, the route is via the Supreme Court of Appeal. In labor matters, the route is direct. In traditional matters, the route is direct. So the clause is there. The cardinal clause is on any other matter. That may require a different case management approach in view of the urgency and the speciality of the matter, not necessarily. And also whether any of the court is better suited to deal with it. Hence, the clause S is to basically allay the fears of honorable member of the minister that it will cover any other matter, not only the commission and legal matter. It's the present act of parliament. Parliament decides that in complex matters have got an influence on the economy of the country, they must be fast tracked in other ways, etc. Then the caveat that do that. So that was the option which was taken, which as Jeffrey said, it's a matter can be discussed on a case by case basis when we don't parliament lose it. But it's not a blanket kind of clause that was suggested when discussion took place. But that's what brings the attention of the members.
That is helpful. particularly the reservations from the Constitutional Court's perspective on the Competitions Appeal Court. My concern about the present formulation of any Act of Parliament is that you can have a Finance Committee that sits every single day, one day introducing an amendment that they will now exclude the SEA on income tax matters and go directly to the CC, and we sit with justice, we won't even know about it. And the SEA, where will that discussion take place with the SEA? We know the process or the discussions with the Constitutional Court. Do you follow? So in an ideal world, Parliament will consult them one another and all parties are represented there. But we know in reality, as pointed out by Mr. De Lange, when the Competitions Act was formulated and they intended a certain thing, we were never consulted as to the implications for the courts. So in a practical situation, my concern is you having another portfolio committee suddenly deciding that the Maritime Law Act must exclude the Constitutional Court or something, which would be unconstitutional, obviously, but it's not inconceivable. So that is, and I appreciate the issue of the time constraints and that, but this is something we need to think very carefully. I, just from a fact off the top of my head, like that idea of just referring to the Labour Court, because that we seem to have general informal consensus about. I've got a concern about the competitions at the court still, but that's just, I'm open to persuasion. Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, sorry, I can't resist. I mean, we're all members of Parliament. Mm-hmm. Parliament passes these bills. I'm shocked by Mr. Watt's admission that he doesn't know what bills he's voting for.
Notwithstanding that, you know, there was that question, how could this have happened anyway?
Chair, we made an addition that I think want to ask Judge Davis
to make a submission.
Should we?
Start with one in writing and then we can then see whether we want to invite to come. I think we should notify Minister Patel and also ask if he wants to make submissions.
Changing the name of the Supreme Court of Appeal.
Why?
Going to be either Court of Appeal of a similar data.
Well, that would be the Supreme Court.
In their area of operation.
Well, Chair, it's not in my mountainous perspective of 20 feet. If you climb Kilimanjaro, you find that at the highest point is the Hulu. There are a number, I think there are three peaks that are on Kilimanjaro.
You can
ascend
all
of that,
you know. No, it
couldn't be, it's possible.
So my point is wondering what, and our new
Kilimanjaro
geography is that the Indian is like
another. Maybe another.
So the difference point then is whether we call the one the superior point of appeal.
Which is the beauty of
things. All right, we'll ask Judge Davis to make a submission. And if necessary, we'll ask him to appear before. All day. All right. Okay. Is there any more on clause 4 that we want to? No. All right. Okay. Fresh coffee. Should we have a coffee break before moving on to clause 5?
We're all feeling that lifestyle.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ons het bijvoorbeeld bepalen gehad van die reductie in die religie. op een schip, op een vlieg en op een schip.
Yeah. 7 o'clock this morning when all of this is happening, talking to the radio, think it had Wolf done everything else somewhere up there. But then by X minutes later, Wolfing smells up where it leads, the entry feeds into the highway center. And then spread up something died on the hospital bench on top of all that. So that it Wolf
the
first
isn't on the entry coming in. I mean, I just come to where it's a kilometre of the leaving, but you guys can stop.
Yes.
That was
And in mornings like that, like on Campground Road, past Arsiba, through Salt River, into Old Cape Town, and that's usually then food, but not even that. It was
so ridiculous. Missed at the airport, and my heart cracked.
Is that what happened?
Obviously relating to the jurisdiction question, which obviously we're parking. But I think the key one is then two. I've got a note from submissions, and I'm not sure where it came from, but for under 2A, the deletion of establishing divisions, one or more seats in a division. I think that was a proposal for somebody, I'm not sure. Why this is deleting the words on the basis of geography or subject matter or both. It does leave it open. That deletion does then leave it open for legislation to determine, which may be better in a constitution. I'm not sure if Mr. Skorsana can motivate why that phrase was there. But otherwise I think that's the only issue.
On the basis of geography or subject matter, Mr.
Okay.
And for the record, I am exactly the same situation. I've deleted mine, and I don't know why I did it either.
Chair, I think I can help there.
Yes.
At some stage, I think I brought it to the committee's attention. Members will recall that earlier versions had the High Court of South Africa with general and special divisions, and we needed something to just
empower that so that you can have general special divisions with various seats. So since you do not have those general and special divisions anymore, you don't need this, strictly speaking. But I may add, it doesn't really do any harm. But it's not likely that you will have divisions just on the basis of subject matter. Very likely on geography, yes, but subject matter, it's not likely. But it's really for the committee to decide whether they think this is required or not.
I would want to suggest that I just don't know what value it adds. Mm. If you don't have it, you leave it open. Mm. And I think in a constitution you want broader issues. No, you want broader issues. The certainty would come from legislation.
Okay.
So I don't know, because it's basically a qualification. And I'm not sure why you need to qualify in the Constitution. You then empower Parliament, because it would be by Act of Parliament, to establish divisions with one or more seats in the division.
Mm.
Without having to get into the question, was this on the basis of geography, was this on the basis of subject matter, or was it both, or what was it? So it just doesn't seem to me to be necessary.
Alright, it looks like that comes out.
Mm.
Anything else there from close fire?
No.
Then, can we?
Yeah.
So six is basically the magistrates in which we generally said we would prefer to have matters relating to the magistrates' courts removed. There is a... that's the first part of the amendment. The second part then is I think just a non-controversial wording in that now we have the High Court and not a High Court, and so those amendments are affected through that. That amendment is also in Clause 7,
yeah.
Where a High Court becomes the High Court.
Alright. Mm. Good enough. Clause 7.
The same.
Yeah,
it's a High Court becomes the High Court of South Africa.
And 8 as well.
Yeah. So we can go to 9.
So we can go to 9. Wow. Okay. Appointment of acting judges.
Understanding is that is the issue of the acting Deputy Chief Justice,
yeah.
Which wasn't provided for. The rest, I think, are consequential.
Except, Jan, the Constitutional Court judges suggest that we insert non-acting before the word judges in line 42. They would want to preclude the possibility, remote though it may be, that an acting Constitutional Court judge should be so elevated. And then there was also a question raised of an acting deputy president for the SCA, whether there ought not to be a provision for that as well.
Yeah.
And for the deputy president to act as the president of the SCA, but where did I see that? I think that's in the Superior Courts Act, isn't it?
So that's on page 3.
Oh, yeah. All right.
It's on page 3.
Which is now fallen out of my copy. All right.
In the absence of the president. Do you have that on any minutes? You're referring to the comments by the judges of the court. Page 3. Right at the top. Bottom of page 2, it says, secondly, we think that provision should be made for an acting deputy president in the SCA, as well as for the deputy president of the SCA to act as the president of that court in the absence of the president.
Yeah, but I think that is somewhere.
In the book?
In the other book.
In the other book.
Am I deluded?
It might be. Mm-hmm. Will you help us there?
See, there's a provision in the Superior Court's Bill that provides for the deputies stepping in for the Chief Justice and the president of the SCA.
Can you refer us to the relevant clause in
the Superior Court? I will find it here. It should be fairly early.
The
Section 6, let me just make sure, clause 6, sorry, it should be 4, 5 and 6 in fact, at least 4, 2, the Deputy Chief Justice must exercise all his powers in the absence, and 5, 2, presence of SCA, where the Deputy President of the SCA must do all those things. And then 6.
Okay.
5. Also, yes.
Well, I... question is, should we leave it in the bill, or should it be made a constitutional amendment? That's what Concord judges are saying. Mr. Jeffrey?
The question is why... the Constitution deals with the appointment, which is a very fundamental issue, so it should be in the Constitution. Is it not correct, as it is at the moment, that the Act determines what the Deputy Chief Justice, the Deputy President of the SEA, and the others, what they call Deputy Judge Presidents, can do? So I'm not quite sure of the argument. I mean, the Concord judges don't don't spell out why they feel it should be in the Constitution. My question then basically question is basically why do these powers need to be put in the Constitution rather than ordinary legislation?
Well, they don't.
But I mean, it's a question, can anyone come up with an argument? After the moments of silence, can I suggest we leave it as it is unless anyone comes up before we finalise arguments for why it should be in the Constitution rather than in the Act?
But, Chairman, what about the idea that it should be stipulated that a non-acting judge can be elevated to acting Deputy Chief Justice and not an acting one? What about that? An appointment as acting Deputy Chief Justice must be made from the ranks of the Justice of the Constitutional Court or the ranks of the non-acting Justice of the Constitutional Court?
Look at it as an amendment.
Sorry, can we get on?
That's what I've done with 9. I apologize for giving you back to 8.
Alright.
In a matter that is not necessarily about the amendment, but it's the right. 173. The Constitutional Court, the Supreme Court of Appeal, and the High Court of South Africa each has the inherent power to protect and regulate their own process and to develop the common law, taking into account the interests of justice. I'm wondering why is it only common law and not customary law? Well, the answer would be the Constitution talks about the development of common law by this court and not customary law.
Well, in addition to that, the existing provision in Constitution.
Yes, that's what I'm referring to.
Oh,
but
okay.
We are amending the Constitution too. And I think some thought must should be given to that. Because my understanding that customary law is recognized by the Constitution. And therefore, if his health reason that he has to be developed to move with the times and the constitutional imperative.
All right, I've made a note there. Customary law with a question mark. If you are in a position to wish to comment, Mrs. DeLanga and Susana, please do so.
But difficult at this stage because we've never contemplated to amend the decision, so I think let's reserve our opinion on this. I may add, Chair, I think the honourable member referred or drew the committee's attention to this matter. He's also chairperson of a very powerful committee, and in fact consider these things.
Yeah, actually taken a strategic decision now that in that committee. Any attempts to amend the constitution refers to that committee for any parliamentary committee deals with it.
Oh, including this one?
Any parliamentary committee.
And you approve that in your committee?
In our committee.
No. Okay.
So we said we see that amount to a review of the constitution.
All right.
And therefore we need to have a look at it and then okay, just it. Go ahead and
yes, because I remember Mr. Ambrosini coming with the argument.
Yeah.
Very strongly, yes.
That's why we had a full workshop on our mandate.
Well, we go ahead to have all the workshops. And he came and argued here, and everyone listened to him, and I saw people shaking their heads. We got nowhere.
Yeah, I know. Everybody wants to retain their power. That's
well,
not increase
their... they don't have any power except that which is referred to us. I mean, if constitutional amendments are referred to us after the table...
No, we're not taking that away. But I think anyone who seeks to amend Cambridge Constitution, that amounts to a review of the Constitution. So therefore, that attempt has to be referred to our committee. It says, oh, okay. Well, if necessary, then give it to the necessary committee, which will be this one.
And the speaker agrees with you?
No. You submit a report to parliament. So everyone will have his or her say.
Okay.
Which is the recommendation.
Well, good luck with that. All right, we've flagged that issue of customary law in Clause 8 at the Parliament section. Honourable members, we're still on Clause 9. We've also flagged the question of the non-acting matters. Should we move on to Clause 10?
Yes.
All right.
If I may have some assistance here,
mm-hmm.
10A and 10C, if the committee has taken a provisional decision not to deal with magistrates in this bill, then A and C could be omitted. It deals with amendments to the composition of the JSC to involving the appointment of magistrates. That's just firstly. Then secondly, B, yeah, that is just a consequential amendment.
Fine. All right. Well, there seems to be a consensus.
But I mean, it's
yeah.
Yeah.
It seems to be a consensus.
Yeah. Now, the amendment to the JSC composition is a little something close to our box. But I've already burdened you with our meeting on you didn't seem particularly inclined to amend the composition. And unless you change your mind.
I mean, I would be the first to say that we should then also ask the public and ask for submissions on how the JSC should basically changed. But it does open a whole new matter for consideration. So if you revisit it, question in your own mind and want us to change the composition of the JSC, we would greatly welcome that.
All right. Well, it's looking at the commission appointing magistrates as opposed to its composition, which is really quite the same. I mean,
Commission, the Magistrates Commission has their own concerns. So that's something else altogether.
If you'd want to suggest
that this is not a matter for this bill, I mean, as Ms. Mutt says, it would have to be reopened for public input, and I think we've got enough issues in this short constitutional amendment bill to deliberate over rather than a whole new area which is around the composition of the JSC.
I think to share Smuts's concerns about the composition of the JSC, but I think the difficulty is reopening and whether it is correctly. I would like to have dealt with it here as well, but I think it does have practical implications of reopening the whole issue. That is an issue that I share concerns about, but maybe it's not something that we can deal with at this stage.
Well, that then brings us to the end. For now. Although it's certainly given us food for thought. We've just had a tea break. It may be unrelated, and you recall that we considered going to America and meeting with the Supreme Court. Well, you will have seen in the media of late that I think it's Justice Roberts, Obama's Health Care Act, was everyone said, they're going to shoot it down. Well, Justice Roberts broke ranks with his Republican mates on the Supreme Court, who voted in favor. They're calling him Sarah. Yeah, not in so many words, but...
Are you leading into reopening the subject of the visit to the Supreme Court?
No, I'm just...
Well, that's the part of my interest.
No. Just in relation to how these courts are appointed. And, the Germans said openly to us, well, it's a political appointment. And the Americans, they don't say it's a political appointment, but we all know that it is, quite frankly.
Yeah, each administration chooses philosophically its people, but you have a situation there where the government changes.
Yes.
There's sufficient regularity for that to have a democratic effect. And of course there are the Senate hearings there. That's the reverse of our JSC and then appointments.
I still like them.
Yeah, the Senate hearings are rough.
I feel, I get a shiver when politicians, to that extent, the Germans said, look, the party's there, the Bundestag, they make deals. You know, if you support our judge or our nominee, they'll support yours.
But that court, let's not forget that the German Federal Constitutional Court is nothing like the Supreme Court of the US or our Constitutional Court. And that's the difference. They happily stuck with the politicians.
All right. Should we go on to Superior Courts? Yeah. All right. Do you want to speak?
With respect.
Again, as you know,
That's the point of order. I don't know what more, you know, how that affects all of this. But anyway, as long as you understand it better than I do. Alright. Do you want to deal in any way with the preamble?
Yes.
A long preamble. Gently.
I was going to make a more superficial comment of like, who the hell reads preambles? But no, it is important. But I mean, basically the issue is my worry with certain sections of the preamble is that it is a, it doesn't match the long title in that it deals with lower course. So we've spoken about the fact that at this point where we are not particularly inclined to change magistrates to lower courts. So maybe just officials from the department in the, but I know in this case that we're making the head of the Chief Justice the head of the judiciary, so that includes all the courts, including the lower courts, I mean all the magistrates' courts or whatever. But maybe just to say, should under the second and whereas at the bottom of page 2, the High Court of South Africa, and then D, the lower courts, should that remain, and the reference to lower courts under E. And then the second last and noting, relating to the lower courts not constitutionally recognized as part of the judicial authority. Should that be there? We are making Chief Justice responsible for the lower courts, so maybe it does. I think it's really those two questions.
And their questions, yeah, it's not proposed conditions.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, as members can see, Chair, that third whereas is really just a repeat of 166 of the Constitution. So I think one should, if we retain it in that form, we should just amend D and E. D would then again refer to the magistrate's courts, and E would not have a reference to lower courts. That is if we make those changes to the Constitution Amendment Bill. And the same with the second, I think it's the third last paragraph on page 3. Obviously that lower courts should be changed to magistrates' courts. If the committee chooses to stick with the provisions that we've got about the judicial management from the Chief Justice down to all judicial officers, which would include magistrates.
Got somewhat up and down my head. I just wondered whether I missed out on some of our discussions. I did. Because on this matter of this kind of preamble, I somewhat thought it was done away with this kind of preamble, or am I mistaken?
No, it's still there. I think
a new act completely, not amending any other act or that we're trying to come up with. My impression is that we no longer have these whereas they want to spend it.
I don't think we have any amendment books. Here we have like this, they have the leeway, license.
We have preambles, but I think the issue for me would be we have, and the department are have kindly obliged to change the opening line of the bill to from be it enacted by the parliament to parliament therefore enact some of the other bills will carry on with be it enacted, but I think the issue is whereas from a plain language point of view nobody says that anymore. That is some old British guy with a wig on. Whereas this or that.
Okay, well, whereas is very nice.
Okay.
If I can help there, at some stage, and I'm now referring to more than a decade ago, the forerunner of this committee is replaced, whereas with since. Then at some stage it became popular again to say whereas people felt since it's not seriously or serious enough or that's completely up to your to the committee's preference, Chair.
I'd like to put Ms. Schaefer refers to any of her speeches where she makes reference to whereas.
And noting is
fine. I mean, I suppose it's a stronger thing as noting. I mean, if you do a resolution, it's noting one. The notings come later. But it just is whereas, I mean, look, it's something you can, I mean, obviously the support for whereas from the DA, but can we not try and move towards, it is very pompous.
Whereas section one of the Constitution.
Hello, I see that. There was a 10-minute was active in this committee.
Yes, I know.
And then it was at that time that a decision was taken that this kind of a language is not really necessary and it confuses ordinary people. Because we're making the law not for lawyers but for ordinary South Africans. And therefore I left, and then I see now that it's back. And that's why I was saying maybe a conscious decision was taken by this committee that let us vet this.
No, Mr. Zanga is correct. He stands up in history. I mean, there was a very strong, I remember the days of the Hoffmans and the Dynamics.
No, but this is one of the
why do we not just have, number one, section one of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa provides, number two, section 165 of the Constitution provides, number three, section 166 of the Constitution provides, and so on.
In fact, why do we even state what the Constitution provides?
So you want to do away with the preamble?
Instead of going straight to what it is that you want to this act to provide for. Or are we trying to say maybe people will not be familiar with what section 165 provides and the other sections, and therefore we need them to bring them together with the constitutional provisions relevant.
I mean, I think at one of the committees there was reference to, oh no, it was the subcommittee on review of rules of getting a plain language writer. But just to draw to the Honourable Smuts's attention, the preamble to the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa doesn't have a single whereas.
Yeah, but it's a different kind of a preamble.
I'm fully aware that we're not dealing with the thesis yet. But the university, when a student writes whereas, would punish the student for that.
It's tautology.
No. I really don't understand why it's confusing. I mean, and I do put this plain language for people to understand, but I don't see why it's confusing. But on a serious note, I don't support the lack of a preamble. I think it is important for people to understand why a particular bill is being passed.
It was just about us putting my memorandum of objections doesn't become part of the
act. No, it doesn't. If I can also take members back, more than two decades, in fact, we were very, very upset by the new trend to come up with preambles and bills. We said that it's not part of the act. It's got limited interpretational value, etc. But the then chairperson felt very strongly that we need it twice. But the peculiar thing about this bill, and this is really from a very personal perspective, you look at clause 2. 2 is really, it says the objects and interpretation of that. That is really, in my view, it really captures what we want here, and it's part of that.
So it's a guidance to anybody or any court who has to interpret this and to read the reasoning of the legislature into this. They will look at clause 2, not at the preamble. The preamble is partly a repeat of what's in the Constitution in the first place. And, well, yes, I personally always had very much grave doubts about the values. But I must add and concede that some of the constitutional court judgments, in fact, did take note of preambles in later legislation. So it cannot simply be ignored anymore. They've, in fact, gone to a limited extent as far as looking at objects memos as well. But that's always been the case. It is always an interpretational tool. And there's been some development, or relatively recent development in South African law, I think you can actually make an argument that you can go to Hansard, which I always want them is a very dangerous thing to do. But you can in fact look at Hansard and more specifically to the secondary addresses of the ministers, for example. So that's all but it's never part of the act and it's of very limited value. But in this specific instance, just to repeat myself, I think 2 really captures what we ideally thought we wanted to convey in the preamble.
Look, I mean, the bulk of the preamble is stating, well, the first two parts. The first part is stating, referring to specific sections of the Constitution, but the key things are in the end notings, which do, I think, add light for interpretation. So, I mean, it's something we can finalise later, but I want to suggest that we do stick with the preamble, but we consider reverting to removal of the whereas with their replacement by either since or some other wording, because it's just not used anymore.
Would seem that be appropriate?
Indeed, Chair, the status factor is the value that is being added by this. Is that this way, even if we could replace it again and so on. I'm concerned also about consistency of the work that we produce as Parliament for those who interest themselves in the product of our work. Now, in one bill or act we have, whereas in another, we simply go to the object, we get it, which is what we want to do from the objects of the good question of consistency as well. What kind of deal, what format does this Parliament take in producing this legislation, especially a committee that deals with the Constitution, the Justice Committee?
Yeah, just, I'm amused to note that, I mean, Ms. Smart, I think, is arguing for the retention of whereas from a traditional basis, and Advocate Walter Visa seems to be arguing against it.
Change that to understanding.
Chair, I am suggesting that we continue with this just to maintain consistency. otherwise, it will then therefore demand that we go back in time to go and really correct other acts that have already been passed and really put a right line. So let's continue with that. I don't think it will do too much harm. And make sure that for non-lawyers, it will be good for them to keep on seeing this.
Right.
Otherwise, it will start making them doubt the spirit of some of the work that comes out of this committee in Parliament.
Conditional on the lower courts linked to the 17th Amendment.
All right, clause 1. It all seems quite straightforward. If we stick with magistrates and all the constitutions,
yes, that's true. In this instance, it would serve a purpose. So to avoid having to repeat any reference to the magistrate court, the regional court, those kind of things, you can just use lower court. It might be valuable. Also the heads of court, so you don't need to refer to the heads of them. Various magistrates courts all the time.
Just under the definition of lower court, because that's lower court in the broader context. Okay. What is a judicial court? What is a small claims court? Well, the definition of a lower court is any court which is lower in status than the high court and which is required to keep a record of its proceedings. So in my mind, that would include a traditional court. It would include a small claims court because they're lower in status than the high court.
The small claims courts are not lower courts. They're not required to keep a record of their proceedings. And as I understand from the bill that I've seen so far, that the idea is also not that traditional courts would be included in this. Yeah?
Look, I understand the issue on the small claims courts because there's no appeal, so I don't know what you do with a review of the small claims court, but if you're saying they don't keep records, yeah, fine, they're excluded. Traditional courts, I mean, maybe that should be left up to the bill, but my understanding is because there is provision for appeals, there would have to be records. Because how else do you consider an appeal from a traditional court? That's at the moment if we continue with appeals in traditional courts. But anyway, if not, maybe get onto that area. I mean, it can be dealt with in the traditional courts as well.
All right. What is, if I may lower down the superior court,
Constitution also allows for any court similar in status to be established, and so that is just a catch-all if a parliament at some stage should establish a court like that.
I'm confused. I mean, if we're sticking with magistrate courts, why are we not even referring to lower courts? Because I mean, we're saying that that's going to have to be dealt with later on. What? It's all going to be matched. Okay, so that is going to... Okay, sorry. Thanks.
I'm trying to take them out. Seeing that one of the...
We have said we need a discussion around a particular issue and a solution.
No, just a reminder that we did not want to deal with the rationalization or the jurisdiction of the magistrates' courts. But, we are making the Chief Justice the head of the judiciary, which goes from top to bottom. So there would have to, I think, be reference to lower courts or the magistrates' courts at some point. My understanding from Mr. Delana about why this definition should remain lower court rather than magistrates' court is that the term lower court is broader, that it is magistrates' courts and other courts. But given that small claims courts and traditional courts are not included at this point, what other courts are you referring to? What other courts that are not magistrates' courts? And if, for example, there is a view that the traditional courts will be lower courts and keep records, then maybe that amendment, because we're going to cross that bridge when we get to it in terms of traditional courts bill, maybe that amendment can be made in terms of that bill. But so it's a question in chair to Mr. Delana. Should this definition not be magistrates' court? What other courts are you referring to? Equality courts is just my colleague.
Also magistrates' court. Maintenance courts, also magistrates' court. But let me look at it here. I cannot off the cuff think of a court outside of the magistrates' courts that we want here. And if that is the case and we're happy with it, it might be better to use the expression magistrates' court.
Anything else beyond the definitions?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm a bit rusty, but I just wondered why we're only referring to plaintiff and not respondent in the definitions.
Well,
Yeah, gee, I must admit that it's difficult for me. I think I see that initially it's any applicant, so there might be confusion about what exactly is meant by plaintiff. Presumably there wouldn't be any doubt as to what is meant by respondent, and presumably that is not by itself. But this is carried over again from the existing Supreme Court Act.
Presumably, it's used in the bill, but my concern now is the procedural point, and it's one I make reluctantly. But usually when we go through the stage of going clause by clause, we are guided by a document from the public submissions that does help us focus on the different clauses. We don't have that. I'm not sure why. I don't think there were many submissions on the Superior Court's bill, but surely there should be a document that's surely the document. I didn't bring it. Okay. Okay. Are we able to get any extra copies?
Bear in mind, though, that this is not our formal consideration point. You know, I thought we're going through the bill now in the same way that we went through the previous bill. So we're not tying ourselves down, Mr. Jeffrey. All right. Mr. Malani's got the summary of the submissions here, and so unless you feel that let's stop and give ourselves space to go through the summary and then take it from there. I'm guided. Is that okay, Joe?
I think the position is a little bit keen, but if you give a afternoon book,
yes.
It's that meeting in conjunction with it being tomorrow.
Yeah. What do you think?
It was basically, you know, we maybe should have done it with the 17th Amendment, but I think we all know the issues of the 17th Amendment. But I do think the exercise would be better. Look, the submissions were not particularly good, unfortunately. It was largely I won't mention names, it was largely a certain person. If you look at the submissions, you sort of see who.
Unknown person, so nobody's,
let's
he's made a submission, huh? Can you refer to him as a
Because I worry if the bill is rather, is a fairly dry technical bill in most parts. And I think it would help if we use that document to go through. Just starting with it, I mean, not necessarily saying we continue. I see that there are some submissions on the issue we've just been dealing with the lower courts. The recommendation is that the preamble refer to judges of the lower courts.
And I think maybe in this
exercise, because it's sort of technical, that maybe the department could guide us as we go through each clause, just sort of raising which are the issues. So we could maybe continue with that, or I don't know it's now 12:05, a break and start tomorrow, having read, and I don't know if the department are prepared to start talking to each clause. It would be both submissions, and the type thing would be, this is what this clause does, and maybe anything relevant in terms of the deliberations that was controversial, or that, look, it's just taken from the Supreme Court Act, and that's why we've got it here, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Also the ECA memorandum. I hope Debbie can track it down.
On the point of a simple and understandable language, what is talking to you a clause? I mean, I don't talk to you a clause.
All right, let me put this to you. We can continue in the vein we have been doing, but the other option is we stop now and come back tomorrow. On the understanding that we do so, yeah, with the summary of submissions before us.
Can I restart it now?
Yes.
can I suggest for those of us who
we'll learn in Somerset,
no,
I think I can maybe help you with that issue of the Supreme Court Appeal, Chair. Earlier, at some stage last year, we had submission from the heads of court, a joint submission from the heads of court. At the time, Justice Noble was the Chief Justice. And it's about 20 pages or more. And I saw from one of your secretary's emails that you've got that document. In the document itself, the breakdown that comes as this is the CC's view, this is the SCA's view, these are other courts' views. They do that kind of, and I think when the Constitutional Court in their document referred to what the SCA judges said, they're referring to that document. But, so we must make sure that you actually can put your finger on it. But it was emailed to me from Mr. Rahman, so I'm sure that he's circulated right.
Was
it
leaked
by
again. Maybe you create a problem now. All right, Mr. Romero will look for that document. And
having, I suppose it's best would be to say glance at the document. I think the document, it is quite, it's a whole thick file. And it wouldn't be classified because it's not relating to any of the matters, as you well know. Under the law that was passed previously, yeah. But no, what I just want to suggest is that it's maybe I not conceding anything. I'm not sure how much benefit there would be on the thing broadly. Maybe there is a copy available, but I suppose if there's an e-copy, it's fine that can be distributed. But I'm just worried about more mounds of paper. That maybe when the officials take us when the officials take us through the clauses, that they can then refer us to any debates that may have happened, that may still be relevant. And I emphasize the point, still be relevant. I mean, you know, everybody knows, I think, that there was an extensive debate on the issue of the relationship between the minister and the chief justice on the administration of the courts, which, as far as I understand, has been resolved. Nobody is in disagreement from a party political point, from the judges, from the minister, whatever. So that debate we don't need to go into. It's not going to help us. So I want to suggest, Chair, that if there are e-copy, let them be sent out. If there aren't, maybe Mr. Romano brings a copy or a copy is brought, but not necessary to make one for each member, because I think the necessary is the same. And then when the officials, Mr. Delana, Mr. Skorsana, take us through the document, they can refer, and if sections of those submissions need to be copied for members to look at, then they look at them.
Okay.
Otherwise, we're going to be here for 2 years on this bill, and we're going to be reinventing the wheel.
Can you do that for us? Yeah. Thank you. Maybe can we delegate on the committee? Can we delegate the secretary to and it was presented summary, let's start earlier, 8:30 for example. And then the summary on the salient points.
Okay, then tomorrow at 9, venue, M514, alright, M514. So we'll get that document, the thick one, and submit a submission. You got mine, I'm not sure.
Fine. I'm going to do the way the situation of the